Hi, this is Dave Smith, author of Hidden Nikki and In the Shadow of the Matterhorn. Get ready for an exciting new episode of Stories of the Magic.
Welcome to Stories of the Magic, an unofficial Disney podcast with your host, Randy Crane. Hear stories from Disney cast members, Imagineers, artists, and more right here on Stories of the Magic. And now, here's your host, Randy Crane.
Welcome to episode 12 of Stories of the Magic. I'm Randy, your host. Thank you for joining me. I've been looking at the listener statistics over the last couple of days, and it looks like we have a lot of new listeners. If you're one of them, welcome. I'm glad you're here. I hope you enjoy the show. I'd also like to invite you to go back and listen to the previous shows. We're only a dozen episodes in, so it won't be too challenging, and there've been some fantastic guests. In this episode, we begin another two-part interview, this time with Nate Parrish. This one may be a little different, though. You see, usually these two-parters are a single interview that I split into two shows. But this time, Nate and I have only recorded the first part. We still need to go back and record part two. Since we don't have that recording scheduled yet, part one and part two may not be back-to-back like the others have been. You'll just have to wait and see how it works out. So will I, for that matter. I was really looking forward to this conversation with Nate, and it didn't disappoint, as you'll hear for yourselves shortly. Not only was Nate a Walt Disney World cast member, he's also the co-host of one of the best Disney podcasts out there, Wedway Radio, and its companion show, Wedway Now. Nate and I talked about both his time as a cast member and the podcast, how he got into podcasting in the first place, and even compare our perspectives on being a regular visitor at the Disney parks on one coast, and then visiting the other ones. We had a lot of fun talking, and we hope you'll enjoy listening. Before we begin the interview, let me remind you of the very important announcement from the last couple of weeks. I'm still asking for your support as I participate in the Chalk Disneyland Resort Walk in the Park to raise money for Children's Hospital of Orange County. There are only two more weeks until the walk, so time is running out. I'll only be able to mention it and ask for your help for one more show after this one. Now I'm $155 of the way to my $500 goal. As I shared last week, this year every step means even more as Chalk works to open its new patient tower in spring of 2013. As Chalk expands the services provided through the community, your support will help more children, in addition to making sure that every child who's in need will receive care regardless of the family's ability to pay. After more than four decades of sharing services with an adult hospital, the tower puts Chalk in charge of its own destiny and takes the hospital into a new era. The facility will dramatically improve their ability to make Orange County one of the medically safest and healthiest places for children in the country. More importantly, it will be a place where sick kids and their families find serenity, hope for healing, and people who understand their unique needs. If you want to be a part of making this dream a reality through Children's Hospital of Orange County, please help me exceed that $500 goal I've set for fundraising. Go to storiesofthemagic.com/chalkwalk2012 to read more and to sponsor me. Any amount, large or small, really is appreciated. Now, a brief word from a fellow podcaster and friend, and then it's time to turn the page and start this story.
My name is Al.
And I'm Joyce.
And we're huge Disneyland fans. In fact, we love the Disneyland Resort so much, we host a podcast dedicated to the happiest place on Earth to share that passion with others.
That's right. On our show, Tales from the Mouse House Disneyland Podcast, we share current resort news, some tips and tricks we've learned over the years to help make your Disneyland Resort vacation the most magical experience ever. We uncover little-known and often overlooked gems we like to call hidden treasures, and even review the attractions and places to eat that make the Disneyland Resort so much fun.
And if that wasn't enough, we even share some video episodes to help keep you in that Disney magic state of mind. If you're a longtime fan of the Disneyland Resort, or you've just recently discovered the magic, this podcast is for you. You can find Tales from the Mouse House Disneyland Podcast at www.talescast.com and in iTunes.
And remember,
make it a Mickey day.
And now, this week's interview on Stories of the Magic.
I've said before that for a lot of us, Disney gets in our blood. My guest this week certainly fits that description. Nate Parrish started as a guest, transitioned into being a cast member, and now is back to being a guest, but with a new level of appreciation and insight. Disney is so much a part of who he is, in fact, that he not only visits, he podcasts. I first heard Nate on the Dearly Departed Beta Mouse podcast. A moment of silence, please, for Beta Mouse. And from that, found one of my absolute favorite podcasts, Wedway Radio, co-hosted by Nate and his brother Matt. Wedway Radio is dedicated to covering the details and nuances of the Disney theme parks with attraction histories and interesting stories about what made the theme parks what they are today. That's right up my alley. But you know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. This is going to be a fun and interesting interview, so get ready. Nate, welcome to Stories of the Magic.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. I'm excited to have you.
I'm glad you beta mouse in the intro. So,
gotta honor beta mouse whenever we can.
Have to. Yeah, I really miss doing beta mouse. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, the beta mouse nation lives on.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Since it's been 9 months since we've had a new episode. So yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But hey, you know what? The day we're recording this is September 20th. It's the 10th anniversary of Firefly.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
And you know, if the brown coats are around after 10 years, then you know, Beta Mouse has got nothing to worry about.
That's good. Yeah.
As we start out here, can you tell me how you got started working at Walt Disney World and what you did there?
Yeah, so I worked on the college program actually in the fall of 1996, and when I was kind of in like a This is kind of a weird story, but I was kind of in a funk. Like, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life, kind of. not that I was, like, you know, searching out different things, but I was just like, I could finish college or I could try and delay college and try and figure out what I wanted to do for a little bit longer. And while I was on a trip one time with my family and a couple friends, we used to take these trips with, like, my family, which there's six people in my family. And then a lot of times we would bring a friend. So there might be end up like being, you know, seven or eight or nine people on a Walt Disney World vacation. And I always brought one friend with me and we'd hang around Tomorrowland at night. And one time we rode Astro Orbiter right before it closed. And then I got to talking to the guy that was working there. And he was like, yeah, tonight's my last night. I'm on college program. So you guys are actually going to be my last flight that I ever get to do. And I was like, oh, cool. So I, this was pre-internet. This was like 1994. And I basically had to, I remembered, you know, hearing about the college program. And I kind of, you know, knew that the cast members in Epcot were, you know, from foreign countries. And I kind of heard a little bit about college program going to Walt Disney World annually for the past few years. And I just kind of remembered that at one point. I was like, that might be kind of fun. And I called up the University of Missouri, and which I live in Kansas City, but I was actually just going to community college at the time. And I called up the University of Missouri and I said, hey, do you ever get visits from internships from Walt Disney World? And they said, actually, yes, we have one coming up. And it was in like 2 weeks. And so I was like, how do you do this? And so I drove down to Columbia, Missouri on like a Tuesday night and I applied. And I found out about 6 weeks later that I got the job, and it was kind of weird. It was just kind of all surreal because it's not something you ever expect to happen. Like, you know, like you're going to end up working at Walt Disney World, and it's like your life changes and you end up going in this different direction. And I actually, when I was in the interview, they said, where would you like to work? And I had waited tables for the past few years. And so I said, well, you know, I've got a lot of experience waiting tables. And they said, well, we don't let the college students wait tables because they have to pay their rent out of their check. And so if you get tipped, we don't have any that worked in any tipped positions. And so I ended up hosting, and I said, you know, my favorite restaurant there is the Sci-Fi, and I ended up working at the Sci-Fi, and I was just, it was just cool how it just kind of ended up like that. And it was a great experience, and I ended up staying on there an extra semester, and I worked at the Boardwalk, about 6 months after it opened, I worked front desk at the Boardwalk, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, basically from August of 96 until June of 97, I was working there.
Okay, very cool. I had known from things I'd heard you talk about before that you had worked at Sci-Fi. I didn't know that you were at Boardwalk too. That's very cool.
Yeah, it was like I wasn't on college program anymore, but I ended up just kind of hanging out with some other people and kind of living on their couch, and which a lot of people end up doing, because it's like, especially if you start in the fall and you don't want to go back to school in the middle of the school year. So I ended up just hanging out with some people. Actually, a couple of people that I ended up living with were from where I was from. And so we kind of, you know, knew each other pretty well after a while. And yeah, it's just kind of weird how it ended up like that.
Very cool. And, you know, you may not have been officially on the college program, but living on people's couches is kind of its own college
program. It kind of is. You're right. It kind of is. Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't really necessarily have this premeditated, wow, I really want to work for Disney and I'm going to find this way. It just kind of happened pretty quick there. So
yeah, I liked art when I was a kid, and I always kind of had a dream of being a Disney artist, not an Imagineer, because I didn't really know what that was in like the 80s. I didn't really know that. But when I was, you know, 12, 13, I thought, well, maybe I'd like to make Disney movies. But then I realized I didn't really like that. I didn't really like animation because it takes a lot of patience, and I just don't have that kind of patience. I like to move, you know, from one thing to the other. And I kind of put that in the back of my mind and said, well, you know, that's a job for somebody else. And, but I respected it and liked it. And I always thought it'd be a you know, awesome to work there. And plus, growing up in Kansas City, I mean, I have no idea what Los Angeles is like. And I had no idea like where Disney movies were even made. So, you know, being like at that age living here.
Sure. Okay. So it kind of happened, but it was kind of putting you right where you wanted to be, especially being at your favorite restaurant there. I mean, I have to admit, 50s Prime Time is my favorite at the studios, but close behind it is Sci-Fi.
Well, you know, since then, I don't really like it as much now. I like the ambiance and I like the design and everything, mm-hmm. but I don't think the food is very good. But when you're like, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, you don't know what good food is. So, I mean,
right.
A cheeseburger and fries is just great, though. Yeah.
And they do that well.
They do that well. And the milkshakes and all that mm-hmm. stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so stick to those and you're good. And, you know, who doesn't love sitting in a car and watching trailers and things from B-movies?
Oh, and I love, like, old sci-fi movies. Like, I love, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon and B-movies and A-movies. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of old movies anyway, but old sci-fi movies are really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just about jumped out of the car with excitement when I saw the trailer for Plan 9 from Outer Space show up. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm right there with you on that. So what did you love most about what you did throughout that whole time there?
You know, I met a lot of great people working at the studios. There was almost like, since it's so kind of tight, like the studios are a lot of things back up. Like we shared a kitchen with the commissary. So I ended up meeting all these people who worked at the commissary too. And then the studio catering company's right behind us. We didn't share a kitchen with them, but they were always right there. And then we had the Muppets people and we had the Ellen's by the Book. It's changed now. It's the Writer's Stop or whatever, but it was mm-hmm. opened as
the place with the carrot cake cookie.
Right. And mm-hmm. that opened while I was working there. So I really, you know, I just liked meeting all these people I was a kid from Kansas City who'd never really met anyone who wasn't from here unless I met them at school, and, you know, meeting people that grew up in Boston and Pennsylvania and Michigan, and there was a ton of college program kids from the eastern part of the country. There were a few from St. Louis, Kansas City, but I think I was pretty much as far west as you could get, and coming in contact with people from these whole other cultures, but then realizing that they're not that different from you. So it was just so much fun to interact with different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it's probably changed over the years, but what was the college program like? I mean, I've heard about it. I don't really know a whole lot about.
Well, it was a big party, I'll tell you that.
So it was college, okay.
It was just like your first 2 weeks as a freshman in college. I mean, it was like, whoa, what's going on here? But it was, but you know, after that, it kind of settles down. But there was a lot of people who I think were very happy to be away from their own situation and were just ready to party. But it was, you know, it was lots of fun. I mean, I ended up living with a guy from Michigan. I roomed with him, and then there was a guy from Texas and a guy from Illinois and a guy from New York. And there's one more guy. I can't even remember who it is now. But it was great. You had no money, first off. And so you basically had to, like, invent your own fun. So, I mean, you got paid hardly anything. And, you know, you didn't want to – like, this was – like, I was so naive, like, I didn't even have a credit card. So it was like, I basically had cash. So wherever I went, I had to use cash. And so I literally ate, like, once a day, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 20 years old, and I basically had, like, a double bacon double cheeseburger for lunch, like a large fries and, like, a giant Coke. And then you could, you know, since I worked in a restaurant, which was lucky, I could just drink Coke all day. And when I went home, you know, I never went shopping. And so I was, you know, I was broke, so basically, if you went and did anything, you had to pay for it. So, but it was lots of fun. It was one of those kind of defining moments in your life. Like, it's not like I wish I were doing that now, but it's one of those times when you were having fun and you knew something was special. And I realized it during that time. Like, that was like, I realized at that time, like, oh, hold on to this, and, you know, remember a lot about this because it's pretty special.
Yeah. Do you remember a particular moment where it dawned on you, or you came to that realization?
Yeah, actually I do. I was at the guy who I roomed with. He was worked at the Wilderness Lodge, and I remember walking down, and he was like, I can't believe these 5 weeks have gone by. And then I realized we'd been there for 5 weeks, and it felt like, you know, 2 weeks. And I was like, this is so much fun. I can't believe how much fun this is. And working, I felt like I was on vacation. It was really like that, because working was fun. Working at the sci-fi as a host, there was actually like 8 different jobs. So you never did one job for more than an hour. So you'd basically go around, you'd set tables, you would bus tables, you would roll silverware, you would check people in, you would seat people, you'd be the outdoor greeter. There's a bunch of different jobs there at that time. I don't know if it's changed since then. That was 1996, but it was, you know, just a blast.
Oh, that sounds very cool. So at the time that you were there, either at Sci-Fi or at the Boardwalk, do you have any favorite stories of guests? Something where maybe you were able to do something a little extra special, or maybe they did something for you, or anything like that?
Let's see. Okay, so I worked there during the first Super Soap Weekend. Do you remember those?
Okay.
Super Soap Weekends?
Yeah.
And they called the hosts back to the kitchen, and they were like, okay, so we're going to have like 3 soap opera people here today, and we want them to be seated as soon as they come in. They're going to be with the VIP tour guide. And they said, who watches soaps? And I just happened to be working on a shift. It was like, I was like the only male. And I'm like, I don't know who's on soap operas. And so he looked around and he saw, like, he like listed who was going to be there, the manager. And he saw like all these girls' faces. And he goes, Nate, you're going to seat all 3. Okay, awesome. So they were like, what? They're like, no, we don't want fans. We don't want people that are going to, you know, go gaga over them. They want to eat. So, Nate, you're going to seat all 3. And so I ended up seating like 3 of these soap stars. I the only soap opera star I knew was like Susan Lucci, and it wasn't Susan Lucci. So I'm like, okay, all right, come on back. And my name's Nate. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Dining Theater restaurant. This is a restaurant made out like the Hollywood Hills of the 1950s, something like that. I was wearing roller skates and skating backwards and, you know, down the thing and taking them to their car. And that's one thing. Another kind of funny thing is my brother, Matt, who hosts the Wedway Radio and the Wedway Now show with me, he's a huge fan of 80s TV. Like, he literally has video cassettes from the 80s, like from the 80s, not of the 80s, from the 80s.
From the 80s, okay.
His favorite all-time show is Mr. Belvedere. Like, he loves Mr. Belvedere. So I'm working at the Boardwalk one day, and a guy walks up, and you know when you see somebody and you kind of recognize them, and you're like, I should know this person. And so I get into the system. He's like, hey, I'm staying in this room, and I was wondering if I could get a late checkout. And I go, okay, usually we can do that. Let me just make sure. And so I looked it up, and the guy's name was Rob Stone. And it clicked. Like, I'm like, I know Rob Stone. That sounds familiar. And this guy looks familiar. And I'm thinking, do I know this guy from like my hometown or something?
Right.
And so I look, and it's the presidential suite. And so I go back.
Whoa.
So I, which at the Boardwalk is not like, it's not like the Grand Floridian, but it is a, you know, it's a great room. So we go back. So I go to the, my manager and I'm like, can we get this late checkout? And this was one of the first weeks I was working there. And he, they go, well, that room takes 4 hours to clean. So actually we can't. They go, who is it? And I'm like, well, the guy's name is Rob Stone. I don't really know who he is. And he goes, okay, well, if you feel comfortable telling him, then go ahead. If not, I can go out there. I go, that's fine. I go, he seems pretty cool. So I go out. I tell him. He's like, oh, okay. I go, well, you know, if there's anything else we can do for you, let me know. And he walked away. And it took me like 10 minutes. And I realized that's the guy from Mr. Belvedere. I was like the older brother. And so like, I was like, I got to call Matt. So Matt was like 16 at the time. So I go back in the back. I'm like, Matt, I just met Rob Stone. He's like, no way, you did. I had no idea who he was. I didn't even know who he was when I was talking to him. He's like, you know, he's Kevin. And I'm like, no, I don't know. But yeah. So, but there were a few celebrities like, but the thing is, like, working there, it's like a celebrity there almost every day. It's almost like, because at studios, we had Star of the Day. And so it wasn't that uncommon to see someone who was on TV at one time. And it almost, it was kind of commonplace, and people would say, oh, so-and-so's in the park. And while I was working there, it was during the 25th anniversary, which is started on October 1st, 1996. And so they had a big, huge celebration. They had like a big press night, and Studios was host to one of the parties there. And so I got to see like Michael J. Fox and Bob Hope and a few other people, Michael Eisner and a few people who I think I've just forgotten at this point, but it was a lot of fun. And you know, so seeing celebrities has never really been like a big deal to me. Like I've never been like, oh my gosh, that's something, because you know, you're just seeing them. What's the big deal? But I think a lot of people who worked there were a little starstruck by that, but it didn't seem so with me.
Oh, well, that's good. It probably made you one of their favorite cast members if they interacted with you at all.
Maybe. I mean,
you treated them like a person and not this star.
The thing was they were all with guest relations people. So they never even, I mean, they never even talked to you because they were basically had like their own private tour guide. You know what I mean? So, I mean,
yeah,
you never even came into contact with that, but it wasn't like you were gawking or anything like that. So
that makes sense. Sure. Now, since you worked there for that, what was it, about nine or 10 months, something like that,
yeah,
that you worked. Then after working there, did that change your perspective when you came back as a guest again?
You know, it really didn't, because I really kind of bought into it. I bought into that this is a special place. Like, you know, we did the traditions class for 5 days, and it was, you know, you learned about the, you know, behind the scenes Disney stuff, but it didn't like ruin it. You know what I mean? Like it didn't feel like a job. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it felt like I was on vacation when I was working there. So it wasn't like high stress. There was always, you know, in the 90s, they had so many cast members working at the same time. They never like cut people or sent people home. I mean, it was, you know, there was always lots of extra help. I loved it. So when I came back, you know, I didn't have like depression, but I really missed it. I mean, it was something that was a part of me for a long time. And but I knew I would never finish school if I just stayed in Florida, because I was 21 years old. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to end up working here for however long. And, you know, I had goals. I'm a high school teacher, and I wanted to finish school and go into that. And so I missed it. But I encourage kids to try new stuff in my job. And for me, that's what that was for me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, don't be afraid to take a risk and things like that. So I didn't come back, you know, any different than when I left feeling about the Walt Disney Company.
Okay. It sounds like it did that time there did what you wanted it to do as far as helping you kind of clarify and figure out what you wanted to do.
It really did.
Moving forward.
Yeah, it really did. Actually, it's not like I matured or anything, but I kind of figured out, like, one thing I figured out was that everybody's pretty much the same. You know, growing up in Kansas City, it's like you look at, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be great to live in LA? Wouldn't it be great to live in, you know, all these big cities and Boston and New York? But the people that live there are just like you. I mean, they're really not that different. So, especially if they live in the suburbs like I do. But you basically have a very similar life. And it kind of allowed me to move forward and say, you know what, you know, I can pursue my own dreams and not worry about what I'm missing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was the biggest thing, I think.
That's great. That's actually a perspective that I've never heard, and I really like that. That's great. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
So with all your trips back to Walt Disney World since then, and you come out to Disneyland periodically too, right?
I do actually go to Disneyland a lot more than I go to Disney World now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, being in the middle of the country, I guess you could kind of go either way.
Yes, it's expensive to go to both.
Right. So you choose your expense, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so from visiting the parks in general and having at least, you know, a little bit of that cast member eye, I would expect, as far as being aware of what guests are experiencing and, you know, kind of trying to be a part of the magic, can see the magic around you. Have you ever noticed anything as far as something special that's happened to a guest, or, you know, if something particularly special or fun has happened to you or your family as you've been on a trip? You know, anything a cast member's done that you're like, wow, I really appreciate
that? Well, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess just how... Okay, so I grew up going there every year when I was a kid. And then I met my wife, and she'd only been there once. And when we first went there, we went to Walt Disney World, I should say. I was kind of reserved because I kind of felt like, okay, I really like this girl. I didn't go there. Like, it wasn't like a vacation, she and I. It was a group. And we just happened to be in this group of people that went to Florida. And we went to Walt Disney World for one day. So it wasn't like a big Disney trip. But I kind of showed her like a few things, like, you know, this is why this is here. This is what this is, you know, and she kind of got a little curious about it. And so when we came back, she's like, I really want to go on a trip to Walt Disney World. And so just go there. And so when I first took her, just seeing like what great guest service you get, because she waited tables and I waited tables, so we both know what bad service is.
Right.
Not that we were like bad waiters or anything like that, but I mean, you know, it's the end of the night. You want to go home, but at some point, and sometimes you get a lot of tables. But she was like, man, the people here are just amazing. She's like, everyone just goes out of their way. And, I really can't point to one thing, except when my son went there for the first time. So my son was born in 2006. My wife and I actually got married there in 2000. So she liked it so much, she was like, let's get married here when, you know, after we got engaged. And so
that's cool.
So we got married there. And then we took my son there in 2007 and 2008. We went there, you know, like his first couple of times there. My parents were there too, so it kind of eased the load on us because he was, you know, 0 and 1. But the people went so out of their way to have fun with my son. Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. I mean, they, you know, it wasn't his birthday or anything. They brought him a cake. They made a hat for him. I mean, they were just like so in love with this little kid. You know, it's just, it was amazing. So, I mean, I guess there's like not like a single thing I can think of. It's just like the overall experience of bringing someone there for the first time and having them experience what, you know, is what's really great about Disney guest service.
Yeah, I see what you mean on that. When I went to Walt Disney World for the first time, and tell me if you hear this a lot, or if this was your experience too. That's... Although growing up there, I don't know if it'll be quite the same, but I got to go to Walt Disney World for the first time for my 10th anniversary in 2010. And so you said you got married in 2000?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, so we got married the same year, actually.
Okay, cool.
Awesome. what month for you?
August 12th, 2000, yeah.
Okay, ours is November 4th.
All right.
So, very cool. But when we went, and we go to Disneyland all the time. I live 7.5 miles from the park. But walking into Walt Disney World for the first time, and several times throughout the trip, it's like, there's no way I'm going to be able to explain this to people. It's like, you know, there's the videos and there's the pictures and there's the stories and everything, but you just kind of got to be here to really understand what this place is about and what the people and what the experience is
like. It's really not something that translates well to words. I mean, really, and I'm not like trying to be overly dramatic, but it's hard to explain that. And you have a totally different experience than I had, because you were a Disneyland local and you experienced Walt Disney World, and you're probably like, oh my gosh, look how enormous this is. This is like, you know, I can't believe how much stuff there is, and they have all the space and look at the bus system. It's enormous. And Seven Seas Lagoon is like, you know, a mile long. And when we first went to Disneyland, we were just like, my God, I can't believe how much stuff is fit into this small space. It was like total like culture shock. You're like, why is the Astro Orbiter on the hub here? What's going on?
Right.
You know, there's no big entry. But I mean, at the same time, we loved it because, you know, all the history. And my wife actually got really into Disney history a lot sooner than I did. So when we got married there, she like read Disney biographies. She learned about special, and I was kind of into that stuff, but I was never like a big reader. And then she kind of got me into it, and I'm all in on this. I love this stuff, so I'm like, okay, let's take it. And then, you know, like 8 years later, we got the podcast. But yeah, that's interesting that you have that perspective, and I have like a totally opposite, but yet similar.
Yeah, kind of flip sides of the same coin, sort of a thing here. So, have you ever thought about having your wife on Webway Radio? Your choice, her choice, or both?
Both. I mean, it's not like I don't want to have my. It's basically because she's very comfortable with just, you know, liking things on Pinterest that have to do with Disney and watching specials and watching old episodes of. I think everyone's kind of comfortable with their own level of this is how far I want to get into it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if she, I think she'd be, think that she was crossing some sort of threshold. And I mean, we've been doing it for like 3 years and she's never intimated once that she ever wants to be a part of. As a matter of fact, she doesn't even listen. Because she's really? Like, I have to listen to you at home already. You know what I mean? The first few episodes, we were really excited just to have a podcast. You know what I mean? And so, like, we would get in the car and be like, okay, listen to this. And it was awful. You know, like, the first few episodes of our show were just terrible. And she's like, why did you say that? And I'm like, fine. And so I just turn it off. But she's just, you know, she's comfortable with what she's comfortable with. And I'm fine with that because I'm comfortable with what I'm comfortable with. So... but I will bounce ideas off of her. When we did the show on the music with Jeff Crawford a few weeks ago, she was like, you got to mention the Firehouse Five Plus too. And I was like, oh, I totally forgot about that. She was like, yeah, that's 50s. That's Disney. And I was just thinking TV movies, theme park. And I was like, oh wait, there's this whole other thing here that kind of weaves its way through TV and theme park and studio. And I was like, yeah, that's a good way to tie all that together. So it ended up being like probably one of the most important things we talked about on that show. And it just came from like a side conversation I had with her and just like 20 minutes before we recorded, actually. But she likes that I do the show. Cause I mean, it gives me an outlet to do what I want. And then, she can get me to do things around the house, and the house is always very clean on Thursdays when we record, because I'm like, I got to make sure I get all this stuff done, you know.
Right. So,
got to be a good dad and husband before I move on, come downstairs to record.
Yeah, you've got to earn your privilege of being able to
kind of,
yeah. So, how did you make that transition? I mean, I know it was quite some time, but like I had said in the intro, some people just get Disney in their blood and it just stays there. And so you're one of the ones that didn't leave it at just working for Disney for a while. So how did you start to make that transition and entry into the world of Disney podcasting?
Okay, so before I even knew what a podcast was, because I had no idea what it was. And in 2006, I thought, you know, I like all these books that I have, but I kind of want to tell a story about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I would write a book. I'm an educated person. I have graduate degrees. I can write a book.
Sure.
And so I started writing a book in the same way that I would like research for a paper. So I've got all these like note cards and I'm like, how am I going to translate this into a book? You know what I mean? So I'm like doing all this research and I'm like, I don't even know what the book is. I just know that I'm just going to research stuff and it's just going to kind of form out of that. Well, life gets in the way. My son was born. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And I actually, I was doing a lot of running, like out, like exercise running.
Okay.
In 2006, and I was like on some forums, and I was actually on the Mice Chat forums, and I said, "Does anybody have any good things that they listen to when they run?" And someone was like, "Why don't you try Pod Runner? It's a great podcast for running that this DJ just mixes up, and you can kind of download the one that suits you because it tells you the beats per minute in the title." And so I was like, "What's a podcast?" And so I started to like research, and I was like, "What if there were any Disney podcasts?" And I came across Inside the Magic, Lou Angello, and I was like, "I'm going to listen to these." And the next day, I drove to work, and I listened to Lou Angello's podcast. I think it was like episode like 26 or so. It was the one with Jeff Pepper, and they went all through Journey into Imagination, and it was like an hour and 20 minutes. And I was like so sucked in. I was like, "This is awesome. Here's two guys that are huge Disney history fans that are basically just doing what I wanted to do with a book in like an hour and just bouncing things off each other, having fun." And I'm like, "This is what I need to be doing." Well, at the same time, my brother's he works in radio. All right.
Okay.
So I'm like, "Do you know anything about a podcast?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, it's just a file. You basically have a file and you upload it." And I was like, do you think we could do one?" And so in January of 2008, we kind of started to tinker with maybe doing a podcast. And it took, I mean, because I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anything about recording. I didn't know anything about uploading music. I didn't know anything about anything. And it basically took a year for me to like, and it wasn't like a top priority, but I'd be like, how do you make an XML file? Because that's what iTunes reads. And I'm like, okay, so how do I make an XML file? And so I would just do like light stuff. And my brother would be like, "You want to record something just to try it out?" And so we actually recorded 4 episodes just of just me and him talking about Disney. And we had a subject, but it wasn't very good. So we finally, we kind of got to the point where we're like, "Let's just try this." And that was after 4 episodes. And so we titled the next one episode 5. And if you go and you look in the Wedway Radio feed, the first episode is episode 5. And that was the first one we thought was actually good enough to be released to the public. And so once a month we get a question. "Where's episodes 1 through 4? I can't find them on your site or on iTunes." And I'm like, "They don't exist." They're not. We didn't know what we were doing. And so when we first did it, we said, "Okay, well, this is the 5th time we record. We'll call this episode 5. And they do exist. They exist on my computer, and I never want to release them because they are so awful. Oh my gosh. I'll tell you what, the mystique of knowing they're out there is much better than actually listening. They're like the Star Wars prequel, all right? Like, before the Star Wars prequels came out, you thought, "Oh my gosh, there's this whole galaxy and backstory, and you're going to," and then you saw them, and you're like, "Oh God,
charge that. Really?"
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's people that really want them, but I'm like, "Guys, I don't want you to listen to them. I just don't want, that out there because it's so bad." I mean, it's like pictures of you in your adolescence, you don't want to see, people that see pictures of you with, braces and bad haircuts and bad fashion. You're like, "I don't want people to share that. I don't want that to be my Facebook profile picture unless, I'm just trying to be funny." Well, so that's kind of how I feel about it. But that's kind of how we made the transition. And it's been 3.5 years and, still doing it.
That's great. I mean, there's so many podcasts barely make it to, 4 or 5 or 10 episodes or something. So to still be going this long and then to even have now the Wedway Now show that started as kind of a news show and then has morphed into what it is now with bringing in people from the Disney fan community, that's really an achievement.
The Now show is kind of like the Now show doesn't have a sponsor because I don't want to drive it in any certain direction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be able to do something different and off the wall. And I want to be able to change the format if we want to. It's kind of like our sandbox. We just kind of try things out. And so we've had pretty much the same formula on most shows. But then I want to be able to do, like, extra stuff. Like, the next Wedway Now show will not have any news on it at all. Because we just want to talk with a guest. And so I want to be able to do stuff like that. Or I want to be able to, you know, do a YouTube show or something. I guess I don't have any ambition to do a YouTube show yet. But I want to be able to throw different kinds of stuff in that feed and experiment with it. And then if it works, it's kind of like Google Labs. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Google Labs, like they try out all these things. And then if they don't work, they just drop them. And if they become, you know, good, then they'll put them out on their front page. So we're kind of, you know, Wedbay Radio is pretty well formed and defined. And if you listen to those first like 25 episodes, it was not formed or defined at all. It was like we were just doing shows to, you know, we're just kind of like on a whim. Now it's like very, this is a type of show that we do. We do a touring show. We do a Disney history show. We do a show on attractions. We do a show on films. But, you know, we don't do like top 10 lists, or we rarely do roundtables. When we do, we, you know, we try and make them focused on Disney history. So it's kind of fun to have this extra thing too that we can do.
Sure, yeah, you get to keep your focus, but at the same time play out of the box and
right.
You know, see what comes up from it. So that's great. That's a really good idea. I like that. Now, as I said in the intro, you know, Wedbay Radio is one of my favorite podcasts. And I don't just mean Disney podcasts, but of all the 30 or so podcasts I listen to, Wedbay Radio is one of my favorites. It's the one of the ones that always goes to the front of my player, you know, whenever a new episode comes out. The details, the history about the Disney theme parks, and, you know, especially Disneyland, because that's where I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to the history of a lot of the attractions that are in Walt Disney World, even a lot of those go back to Disneyland.
You know? They do. And you know what's funny is the more shows we do, the more we find that the 1964 World's Fair was so important. I mean, you know, it's important because it's got like audio animatronics and these four amazing attractions. But if there's no 1964 World's Fair, there's no Walt Disney World. There's no.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of that, there's no Epcot and there's no studio. I mean, it's just like there's certain things like the Carowind Pacific Railroad is so important because that's the transition between playing at the studio to building a theme park. So, I mean, what's funny is we don't even know what a lot of these things are until we really start to research. And we're like, you know, this makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of stuff that kind of go back to this one central idea, and We that's how we start series. You know, that's how we start creating content that is, you know, connected. And like right now we're getting ready to record our last Epcot 30 Years of Discovery show. And the last show's always kind of the lamest because, you know, you're basically talking about what's there now and trying to do some sort of, you know, wrap up. But those ones in the middle, man, those are really interesting to us. And that's kind of we do the show for us. I mean, I know we have great listeners and people that, you know, really like what we're doing. But I mean, really, when it comes down to it, it's kind of like what we are interested in. It's kind of like, you know, I don't want to do a show on stuff I'm not interested in because it won't be very fun. And I won't put the effort into it like that I would something that I'm really interested in. So, you know, you find these things like, you know, it started out as a show where we just do like, what was, you know, when did this begin? What was who designed it? And now it's like, you know, the cultural implications of this particular attraction are amazing. You know, it's fun. I mean, it's lots of, and it reveals a lot of stuff that I think kind of goes unnoticed through the canon of Disney history.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's so many connections there and so much, like you said, that has implications beyond just the thing itself. Whether within Disney theme parks or even the way it gets applied outside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the urban design, I remember when you had Sam Genoway on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way he talked about Epcot and this whole concept of master plan city, and then so much has come out of that in the way that communities are designed now that, you know, Walt was, 30 years ahead of his time on?
Yeah, so. I mean, isn't that just amazing to think that there's towns now that are built like a new, and they're called like new towns, where you have like, oh, I want to be able to walk around my downtown. I want to be able to live near my downtown, but not have it feel like a industrial center. So you have like these little neighborhoods that are built where they have like coffee shops and diners and things like that. But then you have these, you know, $400,000 homes that are like, you're right next door. that, you know, families live at. And then there's an elementary school next to that. So, you know, that's that whole idea of like new towns that are kind of popping up everywhere in like the last 10, 20 years or so. You know, that was Epcot. That's kind of what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as you've been doing Wedway Radio and you're on, I don't even remember what show number. Just
I'm getting ready to record 130. We're getting ready to record 130.
130. Okay. So 100 and I guess technically 126 shows.
Thank you for correcting.
Absolutely. do you have any favorite either episodes or series or anything like that that you've done?
I used to really like the El Rio del Tiempo show that we did. It's like episode 38 because it's such a tiny, stupid little attraction. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's a boat ride and you don't really do a whole lot except for ride a boat and look at subpar audio animatronics and screens where you can clearly see that this is being shown from a projector. But like to know that like the, when they redid it as the Grand Fiesta Tour and they added Panchito and Jose Carioca and Donald. And then that brings in that whole thing of like the South American Goodwill trip and the two features that came out of that, Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros, and being able to celebrate that 60 years after they made that is awesome. So, you know, that's a show that I liked. The quality's not really good. I mean, that was like first year, but it's kind of like, have you ever gone back and like watched an old Seinfeld like first season? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're a Seinfeld fan. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, but you ever watch like, you know, like just how bad the writing is and the acting is, and but it's funny, but you're like, gosh, they really evolved. I kind of feel like that about a lot of our old shows, but that's an episode that has an attraction from today. It has Disney history and it ties it together in such a neat little way. And it brings different aspects of kind of like arms the Disney company together in one that I really liked doing it while we were doing it. And I've gone back and listened to it and it's not quite as cool as I thought it was when we were doing it, but that's fun. I also really like when we did the Golden Horseshoe show.
Mm-hmm.
Which we did last February, I want to say. That was a fun show, too, just because there's so much, like, history in that one little theater that, you know, and then why did they do that? Why did they build a Golden Horseshoe show? Well, those are the types of shows that were popular around this time period, and why do they have an Irish tenor? You know what I mean? Like, in the early days of, for, 10,000 performances, they had an Irish tenor. What's mm-hmm. an Irish tenor? You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, and you think, okay, well, you know, a lot of America was settled by Irish people, and that was a common form of entertainment was to have an Irish singer in your local saloon show. That kind of stuff is fun to discover and talk about. And so anything that brings together multiple areas of the Disney company together, I think those are shows I really like.
Good. Yeah, I can see why that would be. It's so open to explore in so many different ways to go and discover things. Yeah, I remember that Golden Horseshoe show. It's one of my favorites. So, and I'm going to link to both of these in the show notes too for my show so people can go straight to those. And in fact, I just tonight wrote a blog post about Slewfoot Sue and Pecos Bill for a blog that I contribute to. So it's interesting that you should bring that one up in particular.
You know, and there's so many things that are like on our list. You know what I mean? It's like, how have we been doing a show for this long and we've never done like a show on Spaceship Earth or Horizons or Space Mountain or Tomorrowland 67 or anything that's like really, really cool? We've just, you know, I guess those are just like down the road or maybe they're too big. I used to joke that we did A-ticket shows. We specialize in shows on A-tickets because, you know, we could go really in-depth, but it'd only be like 45 minutes.
Right. So. Next episode, horse-drawn streetcar.
That's right. That's right.
Which actually does have its own really interesting little history.
It does. It does.
That's one of the things I love about your show is that you take this thing that people either enjoy just for the little experience of it. You know, we ride the boat ride or see the show or whatever, or they don't experience it at all. And you give people not only a reason to experience it, but to experience it multiple times and think beyond just what it is that they're seeing and hearing, but what else this can mean and what it builds from and on.
The problem that we get with doing that is we don't want to make everything seem magical. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want everyone to think that eating at the Electric Umbrella is some sort of magical experience, even though I like the Electric Umbrella and I think it's, you know, a fun place to eat. But, you know, there's some stuff that you're just like, that could never be a show. There's little things that are like added to things that we might bring together to form a show. Like, I'm trying to think of a show we've done like that where you could take, we don't really do a whole lot of shows where we do like, you know, rank things or things like that, because I think rankings are just kind of arbitrary. Mm-hmm. But when we do, like we did the show on the architecture of the buildings when you walk into the Disney Hollywood Studios, that's stuff that you could never do a whole show on one of those, or we couldn't. We wouldn't want to, but somebody might. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to kind of take that stuff and just talk about it and just say, well, you know, this is kind of interesting. And when you kind of look at it as a whole, it's really cool, but it may not be something that is going to appeal to a lot of people. And we constantly kind of fight that. I'm like, how in depth do we want to go? How much do we want to make of something? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Some things do need to be taken as the whole, and some things, and I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I'm sure they're out there. Maybe the Electric Umbrella is a good example that just needs to be taken as is.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. Don't read anything past it. It's like, you know, one of the mantras on Lost, when it was on, eventually got to be, you know, sometimes a blank is just a blank.
Exactly.
You know, they had trained us to look for so many things that eventually got to, you know what, this just is what it is. Oh. Let it go. And so I'm sure there's things like that throughout the Disney parks where, you know, it doesn't have anything, any special meaning, or at least not one that we can dwell on.
You know, right.
It might be part of something else, but that's it. So now, with all of these different things that you were even just hinting at and, you know, referencing that, you know, how have we done this many shows and haven't talked about this yet? If you had your choice, and even if it's outside of the scope of what you think you could do, what would you just love to cover? Like, what would you love to have your next show or series be about?
Okay, so I'll just tell you what our next series is. We're going to do a series in the fall. It's a 3-show series that is, it's going to be on Snow White. And it's going to lead up to the 75th anniversary of Snow White in December.
Uh-huh.
So that is going to be, we call some of these shows prestige shows. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not everyone's going to be interested in it, but it kind of adds a little prestige to your show. Not that we're just trying to get prestige, but like, you know, like the Oswald show. Who cares about the whole history of Oswald? But it's kind of fun to document it, you know what
right
I mean? So the Snow White one, it may not be everyone's favorite, but it's so important, you know what I mean? So important to Disney history. So we're gonna do a 3-series on that. I'd love to do a series on the different changing aspects of Disneyland's Tomorrowland.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've kind of done in shows, because we did that Tomorrowland 1.0 show where it looked like attractions that were there on opening day and how kind of silly they were.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do that, but we may have kind of already missed the boat on that because we did that other show. Everyone always asks us when the Horizons show is. So kind of as a joke, one day we were like, all right, last year we did 40th anniversary of Walt Disney World. This year, 30th anniversary of Epcot. Next year, 30th anniversary of Horizons. 7-part show leading up to its 30th anniversary. So, I mean, it was a joke, but we could do it. I mean, there's enough out there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't really know. Our series kind of grew kind of organic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we start to talk about something and then we're like, well, this is making a good series. Let's see what we can get out of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there anything that you've already talked about that either was a series or maybe it was one show and you'd just love to go back and revisit it?
You mentioned
Tomorrowland. But what else?
Tomorrowland 94, the first series we did, which we didn't even know we were doing a series when we did it. Tomorrowland 94 is like my favorite time as a Disney park fan. Like, I loved Timekeeper and Alien Encounter and just that whole, like, 1994 view of the Tomorrowland that never was. Because I love retrofuturism. I love looking back at what people thought it was going to be like in the 1930s today. You know, mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite things to do. So, like, I would love to just scrap that whole Tomorrowland 94 series we did and just redo it as, like, 40 episodes. Because we didn't, I mean, that was so early in our show, but we were learning how to do a series. Mm-hmm. And out of that, we got the World's Fair series. And out of that, we got the 40 Years of Magic series. So, I mean, we're getting better every time. I just like to, you know, go back and do that one again.
Right. Anything that you've learned more about since the time you did a show and you think, you know, we could do a follow-up on such and such because we've learned about this and it's really interesting.
Yeah. There's been stuff that we've talked. I can't think of anything specifically, but we kind of started out doing shows that were going to be based on resorts, and we never really did that. We did one show. We did a show on the boardwalk. And
gee, I wonder why.
It was like, I need one that I know a whole lot about that I can talk about. And that was like episode 11 or 12 or something like that. I'd like to go back, but maybe do it in a different manner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's good. So, and I know we're starting to, actually, we're pretty much out of time here, I think, aren't we?
I think we are, yeah.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is I'll give you a chance to do your shameless promo right now. And then if you want to go back, because I had another half a dozen questions maybe about...
Yeah, we can come back and do it another time. That'd be great.
So I'll give you your shameless plugs now, and then we'll see about scheduling a part two.
Okay, that'd be awesome. All right, so Wedway Radio is the main show. We call it the big show. So Wedway Radio, it's got 130 episodes on Disney history, Disney parks, the Walt Disney Company. And so we have that show. We also have Wedway Now, which is a kind of, it's like a news companion to Wedway Radio. We do a lot of news, but it's not all just news because we usually have a guest on to get like a different perspective. And then we usually interview that guest. So it's someone from the Disney community that's like has a podcast or a blog or used to, or just someone who we find really interesting that has like an interesting perspective. And so there's that. And if you want to follow us on Twitter or Facebook, we're Wedway Radio and our website's wedwayradio.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Nate. And I look forward to hearing your upcoming shows and look forward to having you back on Stories of the Magic for a part two with you.
This was great. I can't wait to come back.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
On September 22nd, 2004, Oceanic Flight 815 left Sydney, Australia, bound for Los Angeles, and crashed on a remote and mysterious island somewhere in the South Pacific. The survivors quickly realized this was no ordinary island.
The groundbreaking Emmy Award-winning drama Lost ran on ABC television from September 22, 2004 to May 23, 2010, and remains to this day one of the greatest television series of all time. Relive every moment of this amazing series as we reopen the hatch and take you deep inside each episode of this epic series. My name is Joyce.
And I'm Al. And on our show, Lost Flight 815, we'll cover each episode of this immensely popular series in a unique way. We'll watch the show as we record and share our thoughts and Lost facts while you listen to the episode with us.
So tune in to the Lost 815 podcast and visit us on the web at www.lostflight815.com and relive one of the greatest shows of all time.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at LostFlight815.
That brings us to the end of this week's show. A special thank you to Nate Parrish for being my guest, and to you for listening. Hopefully Nate and I can coordinate our schedule soon so we can get part two ready for you. In the meantime, if you've got any questions you'd like me to ask Nate, or if you're a Wedway Radio listener and you'd like me to share your appreciation of the work he and his brother Matt do, please call or email in. I'll be happy to ask any questions I can, and I'll share those words of appreciation on our next show together.
Now, if you've worked for the Walt Disney Company in any capacity and would like to share a positive story, email me at podcast@storiesofthemagic.com or call the listener feedback line at 734-23-STORY anytime, 24 hours a day. Were you a college program cast member? Call or write in and tell us what it was like for you. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, college program cast member or not, let's talk. And if you're a Disney guest of any Disney experience and had an encounter or an interaction with a cast member that made some extra Disney magic, or had any special Disney experience you want to share, I'd love to hear from you too. Email me at podcast@storiesofthemagic.com or call that listener feedback line at 734-23-STORY and tell me about your experience. Subscribe to Stories of the Magic in iTunes, on the website, or through Stitcher Radio. If you already have the Stitcher app on your mobile device, you can add the show directly. If not, go to stitcher.com/storiesofthemagic to download the app and have this show added automatically. If you like the show, please rate and review Stories of the Magic in iTunes. Those ratings help make the podcast more visible there, so it's easier for people to find. Leaving a rating and a review will only take a couple of minutes, I promise, and I would be very grateful to you. Thank you to those who've already been doing this. I know some early listeners have been really getting the word out, and it means a lot to me to know that you like what you hear, find it valuable, and want to tell others about it. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, visit storiesofthemagic.com and leave a comment on the show notes for this or any episode. While you're there, check out the show notes for useful links from each episode, too. Finally, please like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/storiesofthemagic. Follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/storiesofmagic and tweet out that you're listening. Pin it on Pinterest. Tell your friends about the show. Keep letting others know that you're listening so they can join in the fun. Remember, I'm raising money for Children's Hospital of Orange County, and there's only a couple of weeks left, so I'd very much appreciate your support. Visit storiesofthemagic.com/chalkwalk2012. That's chalk, C-H-O-C, walk, 2012, all one word, for details and to sponsor me. Or just go directly to chalkwalk.net/randycrane, and you can sponsor me there. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Stories of the Magic. There will be other days and other stories, but this tale is finished. For now.
You've been listening to Stories of the Magic with Randy Crane. If you have feedback, want to share a story of your own, or even be a guest on the show, write to Randy at podcast@storiesofthemagic.com or call our listener feedback line, 734-23-STORY. And don't forget to visit the website, storiesofthemagic.com, for show notes from this and every episode, and to leave your comments. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, live your dreams and make the magic in your world.